As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
And now, Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's Coolest Conversations podcast time, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Ryan Hamilton of Ryan Hamilton and the Harlequin Ghosts is today's guest, and they've just issued a new album on Wicked Cool Records titled Nowhere to Go But Everywhere. It features our recent coolest song in the world, Out of My League. Let's lend an ear to it now, and then I'll be back with Ryan for your Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
She's so sick, but you should know that I don't mind. She's the prettiest thing I think I've ever seen. It's like she walked right off the cover of a magazine. Which begs the question, what's she doing with me?
Mighty Manfred with you once more as we get our coolest conversations underway. And my guest today, musician and songwriter Ryan Hamilton of Ryan Hamilton and the Harlequin Ghosts. How are you, Ryan?
I'm very good, thank you. Happy to be talking to you again.
Oh, and me with you as well. Man, what a catastrophe of a year, huh?
Oh my God, I know. It's just wild. I don't know where we go or what's going to happen, but we're all in the thick of it together, and it's almost unbelievable on a daily basis.
Absolutely. And what's so weird here is that we already spoke earlier this year, but it was way back in the BC era, before coronavirus days in January, right?
Yeah.
It's just unfathomable. That's back when Can I Get an Amen was our coolest song in the world. All this stuff going on since then. How are you, your friends, family doing? Is everybody healthy?
Everybody's okay. There haven't been any coronavirus scares as far as family or any close friends. But, you know, there's still that kind of cloud of, is everybody being safe enough? You know, my nieces they have the option to go back to school, but they've chosen to stay at home. And you can feel it start to kind of, you know, get a little bit scarier as people try and almost force real life back into action. So far everybody's safe and healthy, but there is kind of a new element of it feels like it's going to get scary. Yeah.
Well, I'm happy to hear that everybody's doing well.
Thank you.
And one thing to help us in this this madness, this craziness, is you are still giving us some great music, and congratulations on the new album.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It's been out a week now on Wicked Cool Records. Came out last Friday, September the 18th. It's titled Nowhere to Go But Everywhere. And it seems like back in July when I spoke with your producer, Dave Draper, he said that you guys had started working on demos like late last year, and you began recording in earnest maybe in January or February this year. But because of the whole virus timeline, he was kind of in lockdowns. He was kind of unclear about when things really started. Do you recall when you began in earnest working on the new album?
Yeah, the end of last year, I was, and I think it should be okay to talk about divorce. I'm going to mention divorce. I think there's a stigma that comes with divorce and mental health. Like, oh, is it okay to talk about? I think it's totally fine to talk about it. So I am going to talk about that a little bit. But
oh, good. And you know what? You know what, Ryan? I'm happily divorced myself. So
okay. My ex and I split towards the end of last year, and you know, I went on this road trip across the U.S. and just did some soul searching. And it was during that trip that I started sending Dave demos. So that's where I can kind of gauge it and go, that's when this album started and these songs started to appear. And Dave and I started kind of going through them. It had to be the end of September, beginning of October of last year.
Wow. So your ex pretty much responsible for the new album then?
Yes. I mean, the label wasn't asking for or expecting another album after, you know, This Is the Sound was, you know, had done so well and was still doing well. So this was totally unexpected, as was my divorce.
So. Well, you know what? So in the Woggles, drummer, everybody contributes to the songwriting. The drummer's actually a pretty good songwriter in his own right. Certainly, Steven enjoys a lot of his songs.
Yeah.
And the joke in the band is we have to wait for the cycle of his relationships to begin and fail, and then he comes up with a great, great slew of songs. And that's kind of a cynical way to look at it, maybe to a degree, but it's definitely the songwriting is an outlet to deal with the emotions that he's gone through, and so that has helped you heal, right, and move forward.
Absolutely, songwriting for me has always been a therapeutic thing. I would say 90% of anything I write is just like journaling for me and doesn't ever go on any record. It's just me kind of letting that emotion out. The ones that end up on a record somewhere are in that process. They're in there somewhere. And I'm lucky to have people like Dave and Stevie who go, that's a good one. That's a good one. That's a good one. Because for me, I really don't know. They're just kind of, you know, they're coming from personal experiences, not all painful. Some of them, you know, good experiences, but I'm a terrible judge of which ones are good or which ones are just therapy. So, they're all coming from very real places.
Well, let's talk about this week's coolest song of the world, Out of My League. I love the song idea, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, did the lyrics come first and the music second? Or how did that one come together?
For me, it's always a lyric and a melody that comes with it. It just kind of appears out of nowhere. So this one was, the song starts with the girl's got tricks. She's always on my mind. There was that first. That first verse just kind of appeared. Mm-hmm. And then I had to find it on guitar. It's weird how that happens. I'm sure you've experienced this too. Once something clicks for you and there's an idea and you're like, oh, I have to sit down right now or find some time to figure this out while it's happening and while it's fresh. And that's what happened with this one.
Was that an early song for the album or did it come later in the writing process?
It was an early song, and it actually, we ended up ironically kind of marrying a really old song idea musically that I had that was almost 10 years old. I gave Dave, when we were working on this album, gave him a ton of old demos.
Uh-huh.
And he went, ooh, I like that. I think this idea could work with that old demo idea. We ended up doing that, which I had never done before, and it brought, this was an early song for this record. The lyrical content's kind of sad, and there was Dave found a really cool way to bring a more cheerful idea to it and make it more tongue-in-cheek, more middle finger, less, you know, heartbreak. And
yeah,
I'm glad.
Yeah, I am too. I love it. So referring to the lyrics here, could you deal with having a trophy wife in real life?
For me, it was people saying that I was boxing above my weight or, you know, because my ex-wife is really beautiful and, you know, models and does all of that. So people gave me a hard time about it. And, you know, you just kind of laugh about that sort of thing. But I think there's a certain level of just the human in me that was bothered by that on a small level. But I don't know if I thought it was true or not. Maybe. I don't know. Musicians sometimes do get to be with women that would typically be out of their league. But for me, this was more kind of getting back at the idea that people thought that I was, you know, punching above my weight.
So on the recording, I see this Emily Ewing is credited on backing vocals. Can you remind us who that is?
Yeah, so Emily works a lot with Dave there in the UK. They're both local to his studio, and she and him go way back. And she did something on the first record we did with Dave, and ever since then, I've asked, like, is Emily available? Can you see if Emily can sing? I love her voice, but she has this really wonderful ability to kind of blend, and it sounds really pretty. So I've, since working with Dave for the first time, wanted her on as much as possible.
So there are, let's see, 11 tracks on the new album, and Out of My League is our current coolest song in the world. Two of the other songs were earlier coolest songs, Can I Get an Amen and Jesus and John Lennon. But there's also a cover on there, your version of the Tom Petty song, Southern Accents. So tell me, how does that, you're from Texas, how does that resonate with you?
As far as in the context of this record and it being a divorce album, you know, a lot of people are already referring to it as that, and that's fine because it is. But that song for me resonates in a very real way because I'm from the South and there's a certain way you grow up here, and certain lessons and morals and things you're taught when it comes to marriage, that really plays into it. And an example of an old friend of mine who I don't know if we'll remain friends. I haven't spoken since this happened. They said, I want you to know that God forgives you for your divorce. And I was just like, you know, what the hell? Why would you even say that to me? You know, it's, I don't feel like I need forgiveness for getting divorced. And Southern Accents, it's a really somber song. It's a really beautiful song. And it's probably in the top three of my favorite Tom Petty songs ever. And I heard that song right around the same time that that happened and that person made that comment. And it just rang true in that moment and in that experience. And I'd kind of been waiting to put a Tom Petty cover on an album. And this one felt right, considering the lyrical content and the emotion of that song.
Well, that's interesting. You know, I'm a Southerner. I'm from Georgia, grew up around Atlanta. Yeah. I welcome Texas to the South, although my perspective is that Texas isn't really the South. It's more the West.
Yeah, it's true.
Right. And the accent in Texas, I hear as a Western accent, and not as much as a Southern accent. So there's a lyric in there. What is it? There's a Southern accent where I come from. The youngins call it country. The Yankees call it dumb.
Yeah.
So have you ever felt, just being a Southerner, identifying as a Southerner, that your accent has led people to think you're not the sharpest tack in the bunch?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And isn't it interesting? It should be a Western accent, but that's not something people say. And I've always been intrigued by that. It's like, okay, it's sort of the South, but not like other parts. But it kind of gets grouped in because of the way that we talk here. And, you know, even though it's not necessarily 100% accurate, there are words that we use here that are also used in the South. I don't say them, but my dad does. He uses words like billfold for his wallet, you know.
Well, yeah, that's people, wallet.
Or people say, you know, fix into, things like that. I don't know if I've necessarily experienced it, but I've been around my family when that's happened and they've been treated like, you know, maybe they're not as smart because they used one of those terms when, you know, my family's full of smart people that have done well in life. So I have been exposed to it, even though I've never personally experienced it.
Well, have you ever found it to be, gone into a room and someone identifies your accent and finds it really intriguing or very exotic, and you're able to make some other type of connection with them?
Yes. So that has happened, especially considering how well we do in the UK and in that part of the world. I like that. I do like that. I find myself almost wanting to kind of slip into more of a Matthew McConaughey, like a real, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You can kind of turn it up a little bit whenever you're from this part of the world. There is absolutely an upside to it whenever you're in another part of the world.
So here's what's happened to me, and I mentioned this because we're in the midst, also one of the other things going on this year is the Black Lives Matter movement and protests. And so back in the early 90s, when I went with my band to the Pacific Northwest to record, we played a couple of shows up there. And initially, there's with some people, there's this sort of exoticness to us, and that was kind of cool. But then what also occurred, which I was completely flabbergasted, was that people that were very racist would immediately open up to us.
Oh,
because they made the assumption that we were from the South, and therefore it was safe for them to reveal kind of an inner face to us that they wouldn't reveal to people in the community up there. So have you ever been put on that side of it?
Yes, and I hate that. It makes me feel ashamed, especially now in a time where the racist wheels are seemingly off in this country. Noticed it more than ever this year, and I hate it. I really do, because I feel proud to be from Texas. There's a certain pride of being from here, and I hate it when that happens. What you're describing, because they do. There's a certain comfort, like they can make a certain joke to you because you're from here, or you know you're gonna think certain things are funny that are wildly inappropriate. Yeah, I really don't like that. That's happened a lot in my life, and I mean, you even hear it now at the grocery store or whatever, and people making jokes that they would never say out loud 4 or 5 years ago. And I think it's only going to fuel the fire of like what you're talking about, that a certain stigma is going to come with being from the West or the South.
Yeah.
And man, it's such a shame. It really is, because we're not like that. Not everybody's like that from here.
Absolutely.
As you know.
Well, let's get back with the album. So I'm here back in July when I spoke with Dave Draper, your producer. One of the tracks that we played was your new cut, Newcastle Charm. Mm. And I want to point out again what I think that's a great song.
Thank you.
And I asked him if he knew whether or not it was based on a real life experience. And he said, yes, that for you, it was a life changing experience. Can you elaborate?
The life changing experience is me marrying a woman from there. So my ex-wife is from Newcastle. And that's him trying to be, I don't want to say political, but you know, that was a smart way for him to say that, but I know what he means when he says that. And I'm probably most proud of that song on this record, because that song could have been really pointed and mean, but you know, I'm not that way, and I don't feel that way towards my ex-wife. And it's more of an appreciation of Newcastle as a place. Mm-hmm. And the Geordie culture and the Geordie women there, which I was not aware of. I didn't even know Geordie was a thing until I went to Newcastle and fell in love there. And, you know, of course, spent a lot of time there with my former in-laws and stuff like that over the past 8 years.
Well, you've got a great twist on a breakup song on the new album, the track We Gave It Hell. And, you know, it's very positive for an end of a relationship song, you know, describing how you had given it your all and the no hard feelings and good luck going forward. How difficult was that to pull out?
It was hard. And, you know, Stevie gave me some really great advice. I told him what I was going through and that these songs were appearing, and I didn't know if it was going to be a record or if it was just therapy. And something he told me was really wonderful. He said, look, a lot of the songs you're going to write right now are going to be really sad, and they're probably not going to be any good. but he said, but keep writing, because the ones that come right after that, you know, those will be the good ones. And he was right. This song that you're talking about was one of those that came right after. It came right after being sad and kind of having that moment of, I'm going to be okay. I don't wish any ill will towards this person. You know, we really did give it our best shot, and I mean, damn, what is it? 50% of marriages end in divorce. So
yeah,
this song was actually a moment of clarity for me of going, okay, I can either kind of continue to be sad and give up, or I can just take a moment here and go, we gave it our best shot. Like, we're going to be okay. That song was that for me.
Now, I looked on your like your Facebook page, and the post I saw made me think that, did you do the artwork for the cover of the new album?
I did, yes. I did. It's collage art. There's this artist I love. His name is Lance Lesher. He's from Austin. He's a famous collage artist. A lot of people don't think that collage is kind of a celebrated form of art, but it is, and I got into it after following him. So, yeah, I did the art.
So have you done other covers? Or
I have, yeah. I actually did the Can I Get an Amen cover as well.
To the single, you mean?
For the single, yes. Yeah. Which that was just going to be a standalone single. I'm happy that album kind of accidentally followed, mm-hmm. and that one has a place on it. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I've done some other stuff here and there, but as far as album covers go, this is the first where I actually felt comfortable going, yeah, let's do this. Let's put it on there. I'm really proud of it. It takes a long time to look through stuff and find pieces that you have to very carefully cut out with like a razor knife and then have them all somehow fit together like a puzzle into one image.
Well, have you ever done, had like an art show featuring your collage work?
I've been asked, but I don't know. I've been painting and stuff for several years now, and I've had one show ever, and it was in Malaga, Spain. And I didn't get to go. It was just like they asked for some, did these paintings for a while that were called fake ads, fake advertising. But that left a really bad taste in my mouth. I have to say the art world is strange, feels slippery.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I kind of just want to do it for fun and for me. And if I get to put it on one of our albums or something, then cool. But I kind of dipped my toe in that water, and I don't know if I want to go back in.
Well, I hear you there. I think, you know, I'm not an expert in the art world, but my intuitive sense is that similar to the music world, some promoters you don't deal with, other promoters are really great.
Yes.
And I feel like I'm aware of people who have small galleries and really, you know, sympathetic to musicians and so forth that would, an artist that's related, has a music tie-in. But anyway, so good luck with that. I hope you pursuing that. You know, let's think, since we spoke last back in January, these Independent Music Awards came out, and so your last album, your first one for Wicked Cool Records, This Is the Sound, won Album of the Year from the Independent Music Awards. So
that's
was
correct.
That just out of the blue moment?
We knew we had been nominated in several categories, and of course the Album of the Year one stuck out. And I was hoping, just give me one, like Song of the Year, I'll be so happy with any of these. So when we found out, we not only did we win, but we won Album of the Year, I was just over the moon. And I know everybody at the label was thrilled. And there were other artists that did well too, Jesse Mallon and Soraya. And it's just like the award thing is tricky, right? Because you don't go into this hoping for awards. But when it happens, it feels really good. There's a certain level, especially when you find out that the people who are judging you were like Tom Waits, Dee Snider, Robert Smith, and Tracy Chapman. That's who listened and decided, they made that final decision that we were going to win. And it felt amazing. It still feels amazing. My manager, Steve, jokes because he uses it in a singular way to humble me. He was like, well, he goes, don't forget, you've won an award.
So is the award like a plaque, or is it a little statue, or what is it?
Well, that's what sucks, Manfred, is there was no award ceremony. Nobody could go this year.
Right.
You know, so I know that there's something coming and they're going to do something. I don't have it yet. What it is, I don't know. But if I could have gone to the actual award show this year, I swear to God, I would have it. I would display it with pride in my home. But right now, I have the knowledge. That's what I have. I have the knowledge that I won.
Well, it will come to pass. It will come to pass. So we know the The backing band, the Harlequin Ghosts, are based overseas in the UK, and you're here stateside in Texas. So these COVID times, there's no touring. Are you planning on doing any kind of solo streaming to promote the album?
I've done some of that. We actually did this really cool thing where they are opening some venues in the UK at limited capacity, and we searched for and found a couple of venues that have projectors and big screens that they can pull down where you would watch a big sporting event or something. So what we did, we made places or tickets available where you could actually go to the venue. You go in, you sit down, the screen comes down, and then I stream from my living room into an actual venue in the UK. And we've done two of those so far. They both sold out. And it's really fun to know that I'm sitting in my living room in Texas and people are at an actual show in Newcastle or, you know, wherever. Those went so well. I know we're going to do more. We're just kind of trying to find more places that are capable of doing that sort of thing.
Man, that is so awesome. That is mind-blowing. Now, it's not as cool as the King being projected as a hologram.
That's true.
But it's got to be the next best thing.
Yeah. Dude, for people to send videos to me afterwards of them singing along in a room across the world, you know, and I'm on a screen like they're watching a movie, but it's live.
Yeah.
It's really kind of crazy.
Well, the other track we're going to take a listen to off the new album. And again, let me say the new album is Nowhere to Go But Everywhere, out on Wicked Cool Records. Well, the track we'll go out with is Oh No, and it features backing vocals from Kay Hanley of Letters to Cleo. So tell us, how did you guys meet?
So Kay and I have kind of run around in a similar musical circle for a long time, a lot of mutual friends, and we just kind of met that way. At one point there was a group email between some friends, and she was on there, and you know, we kind of got to talking off to the side and just became friendly in that way and have stayed in touch over the years. And I really, when this song idea happened, and this was, you know, this whole new record could have been just a long, sad bastard,
yeah,
you know, like the most depressing thing ever, but this song was there. And I heard her voice, which was like, God, Kay would be so good singing on this. So I got in touch and asked, and we'd been talking about doing something forever. And it worked out. She went to the Letters to Cleo studio that they use there and laid down the vocals. And yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad we didn't do anything together till now, because I'm really proud of that tune. And it's a really just a fun, you know, pop rock moment on this record. And this record needed a few of those moments.
It's a good one. I saw online where you did an interview with her and Drew Carey, and that looked like a lot of fun. So what was that for? American Songwriter? What put that together?
Yeah, so during this current crazy time we're all living through, since you can't tour, you know, the PR companies and promo people are getting extra creative in a good way, trying to find something different or something unique. And Drew and I are friends, and Kay and I are friends, and I thought it would be cool to do something like that. So I just kind of said, what about this, to the PR company Earshot that Wicked Cool use. Mike, who runs that, is really great. He thought it was cool, pitched the idea to American Songwriter. They loved it too. And it just came from that. It came from, you know, people trying to get extra creative during COVID. You know, it was really fun. It was interesting to talk comedy and songwriting and, you know, find some parallels. And Drew's so good at being this really wonderful combination of comedian and host. We had a great time.
You know, absolutely. I really enjoyed that. And another thing about Drew that is so cool, and I loved how exactly you're talking about the intersection between a comedy and songwriting, you know, all the sort of performing arts, and you guys were sharing ideas back and forth, is that with Drew, it's just such a huge music fan.
Yeah.
You know, and the breadth is really wide. And, you know, he certainly has a love for all things rock and roll, but he also, you know, enjoys music that typically I wouldn't be listening to, like electronic kind of bass stuff. But that's kind of in his wheelhouse as well. But I think specifically in speaking with you, I mean, he brings a wealth of background, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff he can relate, you guys can relate to and talk about. Very cool stuff. You've caught his show here on the Underground Garage.
I love it. Friday Night Freakout. I try and catch it every Friday I can. And, you know, we'll text a little bit back and forth, and because he'll find tracks I've never heard of. There was a Patti Smith covering something, I don't remember, a couple of weeks ago, and I was just blown away that it existed and I didn't know. And so it's fun to be able to go, where the hell did you find this song? Like, you know, he's a huge music lover, and he'll go find these really beautiful, rare tracks. And yeah, his show's really fun.
So about the song Oh No, are those all your favorite album titles that you're singing through the song?
That's interesting that you ask. So I would say 90% are my favorite. Uh-huh. There are a few references to my ex. So in our life together, and some just kind of inside joke album humor there. But, yeah, 90% of them, yes. There's some stuff from the late 90s, early 2000s in there that, you know, are like my favorites.
Is there any one that you didn't include that now you're like, you know, I should have put that one in, you know, that was really...
Oh, my God. It was so hard, man, for just to find ones that would work in that song.
Right.
And it was a long list. I mean, it started with a couple hundred titles trying to figure out which ones were going to fit where. But, yeah, there were a bunch that didn't go.
Well, let me ask you this. In the song, you also sing, "Don't Change My Rock and Roll." So who's changing your rock and roll? What's going on with rock and roll?
Well, I don't know what's going on with rock and roll, but most of what I hear on current radio is just soulless, and like there's no substance to it. It feels like people in a room going, "What song will make the most money?" And that part of it I really hate. So it comes from that, and then it also comes from, you know, not agreeing on what to listen to at home, you know.
Ryan, thanks again for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
My pleasure. You're the best. Always a good time to talk. And thanks again for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, my friend. Let's go out now with Oh No. Tracks off the new album from Ryan Hamilton and the Harlequin Ghost called Nowhere to Go But Everywhere. This has also got Kay Hanley lending some backing vocals on it. So let's not forget that. It's Oh No from Ryan Hamilton and the Harlequin Ghost here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
Out of time, out of the vein, never mind, oh delay. What's the story? Morning glory, who's next? Hunky dory. Bad sounds, blood on the tracks.
That's from Ryan Hamilton and the Harlequin Ghosts here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. The track is on the band's latest, Nowhere to Go But Everywhere, out on Wikicool Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Ryan for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. And join me next week when my guest will be Don Bryant, 60s soul and R&B songwriter and performer who supplied songs to the likes of Otis Clay, Ann Peebles, and many others. In fact, he was also married to Miss Peebles for many years. His new album, You Make Me Feel, is out on Fat Possum Records. And at age 78, the man's talent is undiminished. That's your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com. Don't let it slide, baby, diamond ring.